Jones and Mike. Real radio for real people who are real enough to realize they really still have a few things to figure out. Jones is a hockey-playing, city-living, vegan bachelor who practices transcendental meditation when he's not biking to shows and Cub games. Mike's a beer-swilling married father of four from suburbia. His motorcycling, marathoning, and martial arts are pretty much on the shelf while he limos children all over town to their activities for the next decade. Sound familiar? It's, you know, shit dudes say. About family, women, philosophy, politics, history, people, money, pop culture, kids, fighting, business, life. Join the conversation. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike. 24/7 worldwide at jonesandmike.com.
This hour, we reflect on yet another inductee into the Rock and Roll Hall of Shame, Scott Weiland, and wonder if it's true that Santa plays favorites.
This is Jones and Mike.
Jones and Mike, in mourning, frankly, wondering when the death and destruction will stop, Jones.
It won't. It will not.
My heart is heavy today.
Mine as well. Mine as well. This is, it was not good news for men of our generation this week.
No. You think we're talking about the Islamic terror in San Bernardino, California? No. We're skipping this one. We're going to skip this one, I think.
Yeah, there'll be another one on the come around.
So yeah, we'll do the next one.
Yeah.
Like when my cousin got married years ago, I was in college, and it was his new old lady kind of pimped me. Like, why weren't you at our wedding? And on the fly, I was just like, well, I skip every other wedding of his, so I'll come to the next one.
Oh.
I did, because I was like, why are you putting me on under the microscope here, man? I'm in college. I don't have time to go to all these weddings.
Right, yeah.
Meanwhile, I can't afford it.
And did they get divorced?
Actually, no. I think they're going to go the long haul. So maybe my dare helped.
Maybe in moments of weakness, she's like, no, I remember that snot-nosed punk.
Yeah, he dared me. I thought of leaving him 1,000 times, but I can't let Mike win.
Yes.
No, so we're going to skip this one. You know the drill. I think everyone should have, like, open carry.
Oh, now don't try to squeeze it in now.
Everyone should have a side piece. Whenever someone starts shooting in a public place, we should all pull out our guns and kill them. And then we all
and
just...
And each other in the process.
And it's like the Wild West, where we just carry on with, like, you know, the piano player in the corner just starts up again, and the dancers start dancing again. And then a couple of guys kind of scurry out and drag the bodies of the Islamic terrorists or the, you know, anti-abortionist or whatever, whoever just started acting out, and they drag them out to the, you know, to a big pit. But we all just kind of carry on. It's not a big thing.
Yeah, until the authorities come grab them.
Yeah, we don't have to talk to Don Lemon about it.
Right.
So we'll skip this one, and instead, this week, we are going to talk about the genius that was Scott Weiland. I saw one kind of rock reviewer call him Scott Weiland.
Oh, my God. How old was he?
He was, like, older than us. So it was really, inexcusable. What is it about rock stars? Why do they do this? I don't understand. And of the two of us, I should have a better handle on it because, like, I was a rock star once.
That is true. That is true. You toured. You played live in front of an audience.
I did, yes. Tens of people across the Midwest were thrilled to see me on stage.
Tens of people know your creativity and artistry.
As I played Led Zeppelin cover songs.
Right. I don't know. I mean, I say I don't know and then I'm about to provide an answer, but...
You are required to by law, the Jones and Mike law. You must have an answer.
It's got to be the thing that can often drive these people towards suicide or heavy addiction that eventually just leads to the body just tapping out. It's got to be the same thing that drives them to this is the same thing that drives them to be in a tour bus all year long and constantly almost need to be in front of people dressed in pink boas and singing and drawing attention to themselves. Like,
yeah,
there's got to be, they have to go hand in hand. I mean, why Scott Weiland was a messed up guy. There's no doubt.
Well,
but it's got to be part of it because you look at, I mean, really of that era, three of the biggest voices of that era went down in either suicide, you know, a outright suicide or a slow burn drug-induced suicide. You have Kurt Cobain, straight up traditional suicide, and then you have Scott Weiland, and then you have Layne Staley.
Yeah, and I was working at the Loop the day that his body was found in like some like dingy ass apartment in Seattle.
Yeah.
And so I got to break the story.
Oh, did you really?
I got to break his story. And I also was on the air when the space shuttle Columbia, when that one blew up over Texas.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I got to tell people who were listening for Blake Shelton or whoever was the big country stars at the time. I was Jack Murphy on US 99.5 here in Chicago. So I got to, unfortunately, break that news. Yeah. But the Layne Staley one, I immediately launched into... this guy's a loser. So let's carry on. But you should know that this loser's not with us anymore.
Now, and how did people react to that? Management and listeners of the station?
I don't recall. It was early in the morning. Like, you know, I only worked like overnights and like at like 7 in the morning on like Sundays. So, no one called. Probably a few people called like, oh, man, heavy news. That's terrible. But nobody called and was like, yeah, you're not being respectful to the dead or to addiction or anything. Okay. I don't recall that at least. But this time around, I noticed that my alma mater, The Loop, they went into like... You know, they acted like they were CNN, like on social media. We're working to confirm reports of the demise of Scott Weiland. It's like, you're working. Come on. Get out of here. First of all. Second of all, once it was confirmed that Scott Weiland, former lead singer of Stone Temple Pilots, one of the big ones of the grunge generation. Once it was confirmed that he had passed on into the next dimension. They went on into, like, grief mode. Our hearts are heavy. We were already planning on doing a 90s weekend. It smells like the 90s weekend here in the Loop. And we're going to dedicate it to Scott Weiland. And that just rubbed me the wrong way. It really rubbed me the wrong way. And a few people commented I do like me some commenters on Facebook. And a few people were like, why, man? You guys are like celebrating the life of a junkie and you didn't even play his music anyway. And I like when people kind of throw the BS flag on people and the media especially. So I applauded that. But this time around, man, I'm like, come on, wait a second. This happens just as almost as often as mass murders and terrorist attacks and things like that. We lose some sort of a celebrity to any number of maladies, including but not limited to suicide by masturbation, which that apparently fell two of our celebrity friends.
David Carradine.
Yes.
And then an excess guy. Why am I drawing the blank?
Yeah, Michael Hutchins. Michael Hutchins. Yeah. Autoerotic asphyxia.
Yes. Let's stick with that title at least.
What a way to go. I know. Like, that won't be me. That will not be me, as you know.
Well... who knows? You may turn out to be an addict. You're clean now.
Could you imagine? You're like David Carradine was like in some dingy like hotel room in Thailand, like in the closet. Like they found him hanging from like his belt in the closet. I shouldn't laugh, but I will.
Yeah, no, that is. God, that is just the way. And it's one of those things where like once you realize that you've gone too far.
Yeah, what's that moment where you're like, this is so good, this is so good, something's wrong.
I know, but then it's almost, is there a realization like, well, I may as well just then continue? Or stop? Like at some point, do you realize, like if you realize, I've gone too far, do you finish?
I think that's the whole point.
Or do you
point.
Try to save yourself? Really?
I think you kind of bring yourself up to that edge. And it usually works out, but you need to go all the way to the edge. And then, you know, some unfortunate souls just kind of slip over the cliff,
so
unfortunately.
Are you saying then that maybe he didn't even know that it was about to happen and then it because it was about to go where it was supposed to, and then it went too far. But
yeah, it's so bizarre to me that I can't conjecture really what you're thinking. Well, okay, I'll try. I think that you kind of black out a little bit right at the moment
of and maximum enjoyment.
That's right, right at the pinnacle of pleasure, which I think I went to that. That's in Stone Park, actually. That is a strip club, the pinnacle of pleasure.
Right, no, fashion shows.
Yes, they do lingerie shows at the pinnacle of pleasure. But you need to get all the way to the edge, and then I guess at some point, David or Michael would reach their right hand up and stop it in time. So autoerotica asphyxia, and then we have like junkies like Philip Seymour Hoffman found with like needles still in their arms. Gross. And now we can add Scott Weiland to the sordid list. More on this, Jones and Mike.
When it comes to finding a holistic doctor near you, where can you turn for help? When you need a cancer doctor who will advocate for a non-surgical, non-chemical course of treatment, where can you find her? When you need a chiropractor or acupuncturist, when you need help with ailments that many doctors and even hospitals just plain turn away, like Lyme disease, who can help you with natural solutions and strategies for diabetes? When you need help to find an integrative, functional, complementary, alternative approach, option, and practitioner, the Health Freedom Network is there. Since 2009, the Health Freedom Network has been a leading resource for natural medicine and health information and research. Now we're also your best resource to give you access to the top docs in a number of specialties, from cancer to stroke, and in modalities from chiropractic to dentistry. The Health Freedom Network's directory at healthfreedomnetwork.com. Better information for better choices. Find your new health practitioner at www.healthfreedomnetwork.com.
Jones and Mike Worldwide at jonesandmike.com. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike.
Jones and Mike. This show is full of empathy and sympathy. All of the pathies.
Yes, but hopefully this show will be more focused on empathy.
Yeah, and so I want to be, let me be clear. Let me do a little President Obama on you. Now, Jones, let me be clear. I want every addict to get help. And there's like tons of help.
Good, because there's tons of addicts.
Yeah, like there's a dealer on every street corner. Here's how it goes. There's a chicken in every pot, a dealer on every corner, and a rehab on every block. So there's tons of help out there. So if you have depression, I want you to get help. Like, this is what I want The Loop to do this weekend. Like, do the 90s weekend, blah, blah, blah. But I also want you to be honest about what's happening. And last spring, this recording of Scott Weiland and his band came out.
This is brutal.
The really bad performance of Vaseline from this has been taken down by his management, his record company, somebody.
Oh, really?
But this is Unglued, aptly titled, from Scott Weiland and the Wildabouts. It's on YouTube. And like in the video here, he just like, he's all addled. He just took off his coat. And then like a roadie comes scurrying out and helps him gingerly back into like his leisure suit jacket.
Yeah.
And at that point, that's when the boxing cut man, the roadie, needs to like hug him, throw in the white towel and take him off stage. And the band needs to go, sorry, refunds at the door, but we can't continue.
Yeah, but you know what, though? Okay, you want to talk about rock and roll and why is this happening so often?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, do you know how much he's gone through two divorces,
mm-hmm.
and I had heard in an interview, his own words, he owes like every month he's got to come up with $60,000.
Oh my God!
So, and he admitted in this interview, he's like, "Look, I'm cash poor." He's like, "I own two properties. I have money in stock."
Hey, listen to this a little bit.
Fresh off a nap.
Oh. Ouch. as my brother would say, very ouch. Like his eyes are, he's not there. He's not
no,
into
he's
it
not.
At all.
But I, but
he's, and the band plays on, man.
Well, that's the thing. Okay, you just hit the nail on the head. The band plays on. So when he was in Stone Temple Pilots, and I think this is kind of what pushed him to the edge. You're talking about a guy who, okay, first of all, he had a horrible life growing up. He lost two of his brothers. He was raped when he was 12 years old.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Some dude raped him when he was 12 years old. And he goes out and tries, he kind of suppresses this information. He's not going to tell anybody about it. So you're kind of wearing this. He went through a period where he even admitted, he thought like, he's not gay, but he's like, am I gay? Did I do something that made this guy just sexually attack me?
That's gotta be very common to blame yourself.
Oh yeah. So you're wrestling with all of this stuff. You have all of this weird feelings, all of this guilt. Then all of a sudden, like you become this overnight success. Millions of people love you. You go through a 12-year period where whether you're in Stone Temple Pilots or Velvet Revolver, you're selling, just even in the United States, you're like selling 20 albums, 20 million albums.
Yeah.
You're just absolutely killing it. But then you still have all this like weird feelings that's like you're trying to process through that whole time. Then you go through two divorces. The record industry completely changes. No one buys albums anymore. And I even seen him talk about it in interviews. He's like, God, I wish people bought albums. I love touring, but that's the only way you make money now. I have to constantly be on the road and I have to come up with 60,000. I've gone through two divorces that wiped me out. And he admitted openly, said the words, I'm cash poor. I have to come up with $60,000 every month.
Oh, jeez.
So here's this guy who's gone through this horrible life and at times has dabbed his entire leg into the water of drugs to feel better.
Mm.
Then he's got all this additional misery. And then you're looking at a $60,000 nut every month that you've got to hit. And actually leading up to that, one of the shows that he was supposed to perform in, they were playing at some place that was like an 1800 seater.
Yeah, yeah.
But they had to cancel the gig because no one bought tickets for that night. Like 100 people bought
less
tickets.
Less than 100 tickets, yeah.
Even beyond the whole doing your head in of, oh my God, just 20 years ago, I had the world by the testicles.
Oh, I would have said short hairs.
Okay. I went testicles. You had the world by the testicles. Now, other than even outside of that, going, oh wow, God, 100 people are coming out to see me. That would be depressing enough, but never mind when you're like, oh my God, 100 people are coming out to see me. We're canceling the gig, and I still have this $60,000 bill that's coming my way.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, I'm really starting to feel bad.
You know, that's where I, at least with regard to just his individual case, like how do you dig yourself out of that depression?
Yeah, you think that at some point you would say, all right, look, I got to go to my two old ladies that are each wanting $30,000 a month for some reason, even though I can't come up with that reliably. And I got to tell them, hey, you got to help me get clean here because a dead Scott Weiland is worth $0.00 to you. So help me out.
Right.
But apparently that like self-preservation thing doesn't kick in.
Yeah, but you know what? When you're in that, that's the other dangerous part of rock. Like how many good people are in that? Walking that world. That was another thing that I saw Scott Weiland talk about one time. Part of his breakup with Stone Temple Pilots, he told the band, hey, look, I'm really, this drug thing is just, I can't kick it. I need to go into rehab, which he also in this interview mentioned was $90,000 a month to go into whatever rehab he was going
to. That's highway robbery.
That's crazy.
Come to the Jones and Mike Rehab Center in a beautiful wooded Naperville, Illinois.
Yeah, we'll send him to your house.
That's right. You could stay with Dominic and Jack in their room.
So he has this huge rehab bill hanging over his head, and the band members of Stone Temple Pilots said, well, we don't care, man. You need to pay us because if you're in rehab, we're not touring. And they were demanding money from him so he could stay in the band. They let him stay in the band.
Oh,
but you
got
to pay us.
Wow. I had no idea. So you bring them up a few weeks ago, their lead singer, Chester Bennington,
yes.
Nice name. Like you can pick any name you want.
I know.
And you go with
Chester Bennington.
Like, and he's from Linkin Park. So I hate them. New metal is so wretched. as the kids say today, it's so ratchet.
I hate that. All the 20 somethings at work say it, and I finally came out with it this week. I was like, I have to say it. I hate that word.
Yeah, it's ratchet.
Oh my God, my hair's ratchet. I look ratchet.
Yeah, and you gotta say, you guys don't know how to speak, you marble mouth mofos. It's wretched.
I know, but it's just, and I'm sure that we said dopey things just like that. And most of the times, I can
let it
go.
What up, Doe?
Oh, come on.
So when Chester Bennington stepped down, he's like, you know, Linkin Park actually makes me more money, so I'm going to go back to them. And I thought, and I didn't know anything about Sky Weiland or whatever. I forgot about this escapade last spring. But I thought, oh, well, cool. This is an opportunity for him to come back.
That's exactly
make
what
some
I
dough.
Thought.
This is great. Perfect. Yeah. Perfect confluence of circumstances. And now, 2 weeks later, bam.
Yeah. Oh, and here's the weird thing. I had that same train of thought just a few days ago when I saw he left Stone Temple Pilots. I thought, oh, that's cool. Scott Weiland will go back there if he can be clean. I'd go see them. That'd be a good show. And just the previous night, the night before his death, I was out with Brian Black and we went to go see the Arcs and we went out to grab dinner beforehand. And he was telling me about this book he was reading about Tom Petty, and Tom Petty was this heroin addict. And he and I were having this conversation of, God, isn't it crazy the lives that people can live? Mm. Like from the outside, it looks great. You're selling millions of albums. You're touring the country. Everybody shows up to applaud what you've created. Yet they can, but people can have all of that and be so miserable. And we were having that conversation, and just 2-3 days before, I was thinking about Scott Weiland going back to the Stone Temple Pilots. And then I get home at 1 a.m, and I just quickly go to look at my email, and there's that newsflash, Scott Weiland found dead.
Finally, your Yahoo email helps, because it delivers news, and it delivers love notes for me.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, really sad now. Now I'm really sad. You won't get this kind of hard-hitting coverage of the life and times of Scott Weiland from The Loop. You need to come to Jones and Mike for that.
Yeah, we talk about the man, not just the music.
Well, and my gut instinct is always addiction, depression, they can't be marginalized or downplayed. I just want you to get help, and I want always to reinforce that there's help. We'll help you. Society, people, we want to help. It sounds like Stone Temple Pilots didn't want to help, but I want people to get that help.
Right. No. I agree with you. And you think like, even, okay, fine, the Stone Temple Pilots aren't helping you, but God, you have millions of fans. Not all of a sudden that they're all of a sudden going to start shelling out just cash for your like medical bills.
Well, do a GoFundMe. Do a GoFundMe. You might be surprised.
Yeah, you might be, but just you even just see that support. Like there are people out there that want you to be better.
I feel like in situations like this that we celebrate the death and the darkness, and we don't talk enough about the light and the help and all that. So a little bit more on this topic, and some Rock Robot up next. It's Jones and Mike.
Another Pacific Rim Omega customer speaks.
My name is Tony G. I was very impressed by taking the product and the purity of the pharmaceutical grade of the omega-3 fish oil. I really felt very, very good by taking the product. As far as my mood, I noticed the collagen in my face and some of the lines that have disappeared, my nails, my hair. I highly recommend this product, Pacific Rim. I really, really enjoy the product, and I look forward to purchasing more products in the future.
Find out what Tony and thousands of other people know. Pacific Rim Omegas are the best thing you can do for your health. And get 59% off your order right now when you take advantage of this special exclusive offer. Go to radio.mydailyomega.com right now and save 59% off your order of Pacific Rim Omegas, or call 877-324-4227. That's radio.mydailyomega.com. radio.mydailyomega.com.
Hello, this is the Jones and Mike Rock Robot. Every week I tell you what tunes are righteous and which are steaming piles of dung. This week we rock out and rock hard with the latest from the metal band Ghost. The Loop is such a shadow of its former self, and on Mancow's little wiener they wouldn't dare play this for you. Pity. Check out this track called From the Pinnacle to the Pit.
You have the power. You wear the crown. From the from the pinnacle to the pit. It is a long way down. You will accept.
Sweden's incredible metal gods, Ghost. This is from their third album, Melee Horror. This band rules for a bunch of reasons, not the least of which is no one knows who they are. The lead singer is dressed up like this cool-ass looking satanic cult, and the rest of the band wears masks and are called nameless fools. It's that sort of non-egomaniacal selflessness that not many of you narcissistic humans display. I'm talking to you, Mr. Selfie. Man up and stop that crap. If you have some tracks the Rock Robot should analyze, please submit them at jonesandmike.com. Keep on rocking in the free world, my little pet humans. Rock Robot out, bitches.
It's Jones and Mike. I don't want to lose one more celebrity to suicide, to masturbating in the closet, to doing coke. Now, I did read one of the commenters. I've never even seen coke. I did see coke in Dominican Republic.
Oh, did you really?
I was just standing out in the ocean. It was like dusk, and I was thinking like, oh, this is when there's a lot of shark attacks, and so I'm going out into the water now. I don't know what I was thinking. I was like totally sober. But yeah. I thought, like, this, I'm just going to go about 3-4 feet into the water and just kind of watch the sunset and just live a little bit on the edge. So I did. And this black guy comes out to where I was, about 100 feet out from shore. And he's like, hey, I can't do a Dominican Republic thing. Probably it's a Spanish thing. Let me continue.
Just do it. Yeah,
hey.
You sound like Cheech Marin.
ASA. You ever hear about this guy named Santa Claus? No, he did not talk about Santa Claus. He extended his hands. He's like, hey, do you need any chicas or any cocaine? And I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm really good. Thank you. And I looked in his hand and there was a little crack rock. And I was like, oh, I finally have seen this stuff now.
Thank you, sir.
No, please. But there's another gentleman in the water down the way. Maybe he'll be interested. Top of the night to you. So I was really kind of freaked out because that was the first time I'd ever seen it. So I've never even seen this stuff, but I read one of the commenters say that every cokehead knows that the next snort could be your last. That you don't even have to overdose on it, just like a Russian roulette thing. You could snort a line and it'll go right to like the nerves, your cardiac nerves or something, and shut down your heart.
Well, I think that's his reported death is cardiac arrest.
Yeah, and it's like, wait just a cotton picking second here. You're literally playing Russian roulette. Like, how good can it be? Last night I'm watching The Bodyguard, and I'm watching Kevin Costner and Whitney Houston, and I'm thinking, like, right after this movie, she dedicated her life to smoking crack.
Yes, that was like at her peak.
Yeah, I've got everything. I've got the world by the testicles, as Jones would say.
Right, and she decided to just go straight down the mountain.
Yeah, and she looked so beautiful in that movie. Her face was like, the black don't crack. It's right. Like, they were talking about Whitney Houston's face in that movie. It was like beautiful, beautiful. And I'm thinking, like, she must have looked like she was 70 when they fished her out of that tub.
Yeah. Black don't crack.
You've never heard that?
No.
Yeah.
I've heard black is beautiful, or the darker the berry, the sweeter the juice.
Whoa. Yeah, that's like in a Parliament song. So I think that's, you can say that.
What?
What you just said.
No.
That's not racialist, because Parliament sang about that in the 70s.
No, that was like, no, Tupac has that. Like,
the
that's
darker
just,
the berry, the sweeter the juice.
Yeah, that's just a term. I wouldn't feel the least bit uncomfortable saying that.
Yeah. Well, then,
but I've never heard black don't crack.
Yes, like their skin. Our brethren's skin is just fabulously flawless.
See,
in
I
many
would say
cases.
That about Asians.
Well, all I know is it ain't white people, because I am a liney mofo at this point.
Yeah,
that's fine. I think it gives you character. But hey.
So are you saying
no,
that blacks
I'm
and
not.
Asians don't have character?
I'm not. What I'm saying is, how amazing does coke and heroin. How amazing is it?
You literally
are like, this is killing me, but I don't care.
I know. I know. It's just, I think it's more than what we don't understand of the pleasure of the drug. We don't understand the pain of depression. I mean, the real like pain of depression.
Did you ever see STP?
I never did. In fact, that was, I have like of all the 90s bands of that era that I would want to see or haven't seen, it would have been, I never saw Nirvana. I never saw Alice in Chains with Layne Staley. They're obviously still around with that William Duvall. And then Stone Temple Pilots. I never saw that. Red Hot Chili Peppers. That's the only one of the four bands that I've never seen that I could still possibly see. But yeah, I never saw them. And I like them. I know that for some people in the 90s, like grunge, alt rock scene, like that great pantheon of like Smashing Pumpkins, Nirvana, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Pearl Jam, whoever was big at the time. I know Stone Temple Pilots is kind of that tipping point. Some people put them into that room and some people don't. I'm one who puts them into that room.
Interesting. I saw them actually, they opened up for Megadeth in Milwaukee. In 1990, this would have been the winter of like 93.
That's crazy because I can't imagine they'd be opening for anybody at that point.
Well, and so I knew of them because they were featured quite heavily at the time, not on MTV, but on some MTV like knockoff that was like on UHF TV.
The Box?
Yeah, like Music Box.
Yeah.
And like their, like that sex type thing video with him with the green hair singing through a megaphone and stuff. Like I was like, whoa. Whoa, Beavis, we must see these rock gods. So they were opening up for Megadeth, and I went down there with two guys. And for whatever reason, we were walking on the main drag of Milwaukee, like the Michigan Avenue of Milwaukee. It's Wisconsin Avenue. Yeah. So Wisconsin, we're walking southbound on the northbound lane side of Wisconsin, drinking beer, like just drinking out beer out in public.
Whose idea was that, I wonder?
I don't know. I was influenced unduly, though.
I'm sure.
In more ways than one. And so a cop car pulled up next to us. He was going northbound. He pulled up. He's like, hey. And so I didn't even hesitate. I just start running. So I start running southbound. And this is like, talk about being a suburban fool. I don't, you know how to run away from cops properly. So I'm running with Jeff Wittenberg, who was a wideout. Admittedly, not on a D1, football team, but on the Marquette club football team.
So he's regularly working out. He's fit.
Oh, yeah. And faster than most people. But I'm like blowing him away. Like the adrenaline's just like, you will not get busted for open alcohol. This is not something you want to call Wally about. And so I'm just flying. And for whatever reason, so we head, we take a left, and then we end up going northbound again. So then the cops, they just kind of go around the block and boom, they're right there on us. And I'm going to keep on running. And Wittenberg's going to keep on running. I look back and the other guy we were with, Chris Guggenberg, I think his name was, he's like, it's like we were gazelles on the savannah.
Yes.
And he's like injured. He had like a knee injury. And
yes,
so I look
I
back and I'm
this.
Like, he's the Lions are going to get this guy. And then he's going to drop dime on all of us and it's going to break bad. So I better just stop. So I stop, hands up, and the cop car doesn't even stop. One of the cops dives out of the moving vehicle.
How much scarier would this be for you now?
Oh, at the time, I literally put my hands up and I go, get ready for a whooping. This is going to
suck. Oh, even you thought that then?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yes. I thought, get ready for just the whooping to end all whoopings. Because he dived out of the car and tackled me.
Oh, that's great.
And he was like, I got to take the lead one down. So the Lion went after the fastest one instead of Guggenberg, the low-hanging fruit. Emphasis on fruit, Guggenberg.
Oh, come on.
Run faster next time, man. So they made us lean hands up against a wall for like an hour, and it was like two below. And I thought, I'm getting off light here. He really could have Rodney Kinged me. And then he wrote us a ticket for $150, which might as well have been $600,000 at the time. And on we went to see Megadeth and Stone Temple Pilots. And just as bad as that experience was, seeing them was just outrageous. They were every bit as good as they were on Music Box.
Really?
Yeah. Every bit.
See, that is what's heartbreaking, because I do really think he could have. In the same way, you can go see Jane's Addiction now, and they're in their 50s or close to it. They still can deliver. If that guy could have stayed clean, I felt he could have been that same thing.
Hopefully they cloned him, the best parts of him, before he expired.
Maybe they'll hologram him.
All right, we got a little Santa talk and a mystery story up next. Jones and Mike.
Have you ever listened to a radio show and thought, I could do better than that? Who hasn't? But have you ever thought about actually doing your own show? Now that seems a little more daunting for most people. Hosting your own show helps spread the word about you and your expertise, your business, product or service, charity, or any organization at all. When you have your own show, people listen to you, get the credibility, authority, and visibility you deserve. Chicago Pod Show has the studios, equipment, people, and experience to help you launch your own show almost instantly. Host a show that's heard 24/7 on iTunes, YouTube, mobile apps, websites, or even on the radio. Chicago Pod Show does it all for you. All you have to do is be the star or the expert you already are. Find out how easy getting your own soapbox can be. Visit ChicagoPodShow.com or call 312-725-8017. ChicagoPodShow.com.
Jones and Mike Worldwide at JonesandMike.com. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike.
It's Jones and Mike. Fair warning, if you have a child with you at the moment, you should turn this off.
I do like that you did this. Because I feel that people, when they get into this discussion, I don't think they do this enough, and then all of a sudden, whammy!
Oh, yeah.
Childhood ruined.
I see, like, news anchors talking openly about Santa Claus, and I'm like, shut up!
I know.
It's like, are you guys all, like, vapid, like, childless? Not that that they go hand in hand necessarily, but, like, what's wrong with you? Like, think it through. So, I know we're huge in with the 12 and under set. Huge, the download metrics show that we're huge amongst children. So, children, turn this off. Parents with children, turn this off. In 3, 2, 1. Okay. I saw an article this week, Jones, that resonated with me. It said, actually, it was kind of like a posting on Facebook. It said, hey, parents, little tip. I think it was from a radio station, too, like out in Rockford. ZOK. It said, hey, little tip, if you have a big present to give to the children this year, make sure it comes from you and have Santa give little things. Now, growing up in my house, it was the opposite. My mom always positioned Santa as the star of the show, and then the parents gave a little something, something.
Yeah,
and the rationale
was my house.
Okay, right. The rationale being that if kids go back to school after break, they'll be comparing what they got, and if, like, some child whose parents are not men and women of means gave them, like, mittens or something from Santa, and then everyone else got, like, an Xbox, that those kids will feel, why did Santa just give me something smaller? Does Santa not love me? Was I not a good boy? And so then the debate in the comment section raged on this point. And some people were like, hey, I grew up so poor, and I got, like, crayons and stuff, and my friends got amazing stuff, and I never once thought that. And then other people actually agreed with this, and there were some people, I'm sure, that were crying and whatever. So now that's on my mind. I think I need to flip the paradigm in my house.
Well, what's the ratio in terms of believers and unbelievers in your house right now?
So this is the last year for the 10-year-old, because last year we did not tell the oldest. She held on to it. She held on to it, and she came home from school, and she was like, hey, some boys were giving me a hard time today because I believe, and they were like, you're stupid. And so what's the story? And we had to tell her, and she cried. She cried.
Yeah. She felt like she was let down by you guys.
Yeah. And then she was just like, hey, what else have you been lying about?
I know.
And then she was like,
tough.
Easter Bunny. And we were like, yeah. And we might as well tell you the Tooth Fairy too. And she was like, ah! So we felt like so horrible. So we were like, all right, we'll give Grace one more year. And then we got to let her know.
So the rule in the house is 10.
Apparently.
And now, do you still think Grace believes?
Yeah, it's the older one. Usually the older kid, I think, is a little more worldly and a little more on it, I think. But it seems like that's the opposite of my house. I feel like, or at least not the case in my house. I think the oldest kid is, she's holding on to her childhood longer than I expected. And I think that's cool. I think that's very cool. Grace, I think, is the one who is a little more on it. And I think she's probably smart enough where she figured it out and she thought, I'm not going to mess up the gravy train here.
Got it. So you think she's protecting her own kid economic interests?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then obviously the six-year-old and the four-year-old, like today, like last night, my old lady wrapped some presents that are going to be from us and from grandma, whatever. And they woke up this morning and they're like, Santa came last night. And we were like, no. Those are presents from us. Santa's going to come on Christmas, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So this is a big debate in like Parentville this time of the year, and people like go to extraordinary lengths to keep their kids believing. And like I knew one dude who used to sell like Santa like licenses, like, and the idea was like it was his sleigh driver's license, and you would drop it like on the floor. And the kids would see that and be like, Mom, Dad, look, he left his driver's license behind.
Oh, come on.
It's real. Santa's real. Kind of like along the lines of the button or whatever. There's a Santa button thing, too, or a bell from his outfit.
Wouldn't that just be the sign? Wasn't it the milk and cookies? Whatever happened to that? Wasn't that enough?
I know. I've had so much milk. I hate milk. And I've had carrots. I can't stand it. But we really eat it because we want tooth marks and stuff.
Sure.
We leave a note. We write the notes with
our... What a hardship, by the way. We really eat the cookie. We really take a bite of the cookies.
I know. I eat the carrots and the old lady eats the cookies. And then we write a note with our left hand. So it'll be like... In a, it won't look like our writing.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Which I don't know why we just don't do like what like kidnappers do when they cut the words out of a magazine.
That would be a little haunting.
And so the people go to extraordinary lengths, like Elf on a Shelf. People do this. Did you guys do anything like that in your house growing up?
Elf on a Shelf isn't from our time, obviously. I mean, we did the traditional Santa Claus thing, you know, and then I would wake up in the morning and then the milk and cookies would be eaten. And, you know, the gifts were great and blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, I mean, and I was probably in grade. Well, I remember I was kind of in grade. To this day, I had never come clean with my parents that I knew about Santa Claus. We never talked about
they
it.
They died thinking you believed.
No, I know they didn't. But
on their deathbed, they were like, my son is so stupid.
Right. No, we never. It was just one thing. I was of the gravy train mindset. And I've talked to other adults who are like, yeah, I wasn't going to ruin the gravy train. I never said anything. So I was even 14, 15. Now, there wasn't anything where I was like, I want this from Santa. It just went unsaid. But as long as until I was like an adult, I knew that there would always be a gift there on December 25th. So I was like, I'm not going to say anything.
Like you really did the calculation in your mind. Like if I tell them that I'm on to them, they'll stop. I will get
well,
nothing.
Well, then I just feel that they would be less inclined to keep the tradition going. And
how
the tradition
mean
meant
that
I was
be?
Going to get something.
Oh, my God. That'd be horrible.
Well, what do you mean horrible? What's horrible?
Oh, now you know the secret that we've been lying to you? We not only don't feel badly about it, but we're not giving you anything for Christmas.
Yeah, it was just something. Now, my sister, she did have the conversation with my with my mom. Because I remember one day I was driving around with one of the older neighborhood kids in a car. And all of a sudden, they pulled up alongside us at the stop. And then my mom waved. And then the light changed. And then Eileen like leaned across and like yelled out to me like, I know the truth about Santa! Oh, she was so happy. You could tell it was really like a step in development for her. Like... Yeah. Getting her, like when you're young and you get that driver's license and then all of a sudden there's such freedom. There was just like kind of that bump in development of like, I'm Wes! I'm out of the box! You know,
yeah,
so
I'm an
so
adult now.
Proud.
You know what's weird? We've given the birds and the bees speech to the 10-year-old, but not the Santa speech yet.
Yeah, it's just, I guess the birds and the bees thing is really more of an obligation.
And it blows my mind when people tell me that like their parents did not have that discussion with them.
Birds and bees?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Our kids were so horrified, it was easy. They were just horrified. And then I enjoyed it because I was like, oh my God, they're making this so easy on me. So I'm going to tell them more and more.
Yeah.
They're so horrified. I'm going to scare them straight. You leave that vagina alone till you're 32, at least. So should I be doing like Elf on a Shelf and stuff, do you think?
Well, see, that's the thing. I don't know that you can just suddenly incorporate that, because then I think the boys would then go, well, where's this suddenly come from? Like, obviously, the girls will be sports and play along, but I think it throws off the tradition. But then I just saw this week, and as soon as I saw it, I dismissed it. And then I read the article, and I went, oh, it's not totally crazy. Totally crazy. It's partially crazy, no doubt. Uh-huh. But there was an article that suggested that Elf on a Shelf is training our children to accept surveillance and Big Brother and someone up on high watching over you.
Really?
And I was kind of like, okay, tinfoil hat land. It's just this cute thing that somebody came up with on the holidays. Now, they came up with it because they want to make money, no doubt. But come on.
And let's reset it. The concept of Elf on a Shelf, if I'm not mistaken, is the elf shows up in the month of December.
Yes.
And every night, and he's literally on a shelf or on the mantle or on the bookcase, whatever. And every night, you move him to a different spot. And every morning, the kids see him in a different spot. And then you explain it away and say, well, the elf goes back to the North Pole every night and reports on your activity to Santa and lets him know if you're naughty or you're nice.
Yes.
And the kids go, oh, whoa, it's real, because he did move overnight.
Yes.
They're so stupid.
Yes.
Such dumbos.
So that's but the idea is it's training your child to accept Big Brother. And I read the headline. I was like, oh, forget it. But then I was like, all right, I'll read the article just to see how crazy this person is. And then as you read through it, you think even about the rules of Elf on a Shelf. You're not the elf will move. It's watching you every night. It goes back to the North Pole to report on you. You are not allowed to touch it.
Oh,
you know, so it's this thing that is there that you must accept and you must behave in a manner that will bring you reward.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And it was kind of fun. So I thought to myself, like, OK, well, that is kind of creepy. And you already are couching around the holiday season this whole thing of Santa Claus. Like, it is a fictitious story. And look, your child's first reaction was, why'd you do this to me?
Yeah,
why were you
yeah.
less than honest
it's
with
so
me?
It's so predictable that she would do that to us.
But she did it. Yeah. And there's a line of thought there. And even with the Elf on the Shelf, I was like, boy, would I even want to use this as a teaching moment if I had kids to say, okay, here's this thing. We're gonna invite it into the house. Now it's gonna watch you. It goes back to Santa. It lets you know if you're doing good or bad, but you can't touch it. You can't. It's gonna move around. It's always gonna be watching you, and to see what their reaction is to that. Because some people cited, some child psychologists cited stories of where kids were waking up crying because they felt like they were being watched. Something was watching
Jeez.
Them at night.
Oh my God!
And it's kind of. It's interesting. If you're going to sit there and say we're controlled by goods or taxes or laws on the road and we're made to answer a certain way, we're made to answer propaganda going to football games and seeing a soldier being honored even though it's a paid spot and we don't know it, who's to say that there isn't that same psychology that's going into Elf on a Shelf? Like, I don't know who created it. Now to kind of dive into the tinfoil hat land myself.
Oh, man. That's great.
Isn't that weird, though?
I mean, into it.
Think about it.
Welcome, Jones.
It is. I don't want to stay for long. I'm just here for a cup of tea.
It's a nice place to visit, but you wouldn't like to live
right
in hot tinfoil hat land with Noonan. You know, so in my house, I have perpetuated something along these lines where if my children have a dispute and I walk in, it's always the girls, right? I walk into their room and I don't know who to believe. I'll just be like, look, tell me the truth because I'm going to review the tapes. And they're like, there's no tapes. And I'm like, this whole house is wired with cameras. I'll be able to go in and review and I'm going to know who did whatever. So you better come clean now. And they normally don't bite on it, but I'm trying to plant the seed. Like, just tell me the truth. Always tell me the truth. But
yes.
Maybe I'm making a grave error there, especially me, Johnny Liberty guy.
Right.
Huh. Now you got me thinking.
You're training them. You're training them for your enemy, Mike.
Well, meanwhile, like this you know, this generation of, let's say, under 40s, under 40 people, let's go under 30. You know, they're so well trained to just self-report anyway. Every single thought you have, put out there. And I do it, actually. So I have the mindset of an under 30-year-old. Every single thought that passes through your brain, put it out there. Publish it. Every single thing that happens, make sure you take a picture of it. Report it. Every single meal you eat, everywhere you go, check in. Wherever you go, check in. So I don't even think you have to indoctrinate them to accept like a George Orwell Big Brother device in their house. Seems like everybody is self-reporting anyway.
I know, but if it keeps that habit going, it builds that muscle.
Man, oh man.
And you're making money evil in the process.
Oh my God. That really is blowing my mind right now.
I think there's a chance that DARPA could be behind Elf on a Shelf.
DARPA. So, and I've seen people discussing that there's a new Barbie doll out there that like records you, and therefore like learns how to respond to you and stuff, like this kind of the AI stuff we talk about. Right. It's like integrating into toys in subtle ways here and there. And some people, you know, in Tinfoil Hatland are like, see, look, Barbie's reporting on you. But I didn't realize that Elf on a Shelf thing could be like a low-tech version of that.
Yes, it just prepares you mentally. It trains your muscle. It trains your habits. Then all of a sudden you're less. Because look at, honestly, even if you look at the way that people consume Facebook, I have my hand raised. I'm that same way. Yes, it makes sense to me that I could go on Facebook and whatever I post, whatever I say, wherever I'm logging in, someone is monitoring that and collecting that information. But I still come back to, yeah, but it's fun and it's a way to stay connected. So even if I'm aware of the surveillance and much in the Elf on the Shelf land, well, there's surveillance. But if you're a kid and you're going, yeah, but good surveillance means good rewards, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Here I'm going, all right, yeah, anybody could tell me the information they're pulling on me on Facebook, but am I going to get off Facebook because I like being connected? I like seeing what people are doing. No, it's fun. And what do I have to hide?
Yeah, that's what
and
everyone
you still
says.
Go down that path.
Yeah. Well, and so after the San Bernardino thing, like the media has all of the stories of all of the victims already very quickly, just 2 days in. And it occurred to me, oh, everything they're reporting about these people is coming right from their Facebook page.
Right. Yeah.
It's absolutely public domain. Once you hit publish, it's like kind of public domain. NBC News can use it. Everyone, the court of law can use it, whatever. But most people fall into that same category of I've got nothing to hide. And I fall into the category of I've got everything to hide. Everything I don't want you to know, but I probably it's too late. I'm probably already on a list anyway. So here's what I think about this issue. It's funny. So after the San Bernardino thing, some people said, you know, I raised some questions or had some observations or whatever, as is my wont. And so, and I get people in the comment section saying, hey, thank you very much for having the cojones to say these things. I have some of these same beliefs, but I'm afraid to say it publicly. And I go, well, I'm probably already on a list anyway. If there is going to be some sort of a giant FEMA camp full of crazies, I'm probably already there. So what's the worst? What's going to happen? I'm going to be made into a bar of soap. Somebody's going to smell like Coors if they want to use that bar of soap. Not a good idea.
The smells you produce, they'd be lucky if they came up Coors.
Speaking of which, we have a mystery story, but you're going to have to wait on it.
Is this an evergreen topic that we sometimes discuss?
I am time shifting this content.
Fair enough.
But
people have a reason to listen next week then.
That's right. The mystery topic will be integrated next week. And it's kind of gross. I think I need time to kind of work my way into it.
Fair enough.
It's in that realm of stuff that kind of gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Okay.
But I think it's right up your alley, actually.
God, I'm like, I want to do it now!
No. It's fitting with this time of the year. Delayed gratification. You must wait. No, Santa doesn't come on December 5th. I don't care about the St. Nicholas stuff. I don't care that there's a thing called Sinterklaas over in, you know, Holland or something where he comes, for whatever reason, he comes 3 weeks early and puts candy in your shoe. That's not how it's done in America. We have to wait. You must wait. Be a good boy. And I'll tell you about it next week, Jones.
Can't wait. I'm on pins and needles. What could it be?
The elf is watching, though, so you better be a good boy.
Well, I'm always a good boy. I've accepted Big Brother. I'm just ready to tuck myself in at night and wait for my glad tidings and joy.